Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Lenning School Watch with the nation's education guru, Diane Lenning, parent and educator for over 30 years and currently a law student. Tonight we have a special show with Shirley Huzar. Diane Lenning and Shirley Huzar are going to discuss tonight important information you may need to know to get your child or young person a quality education in the Los Angeles Unified School District in California. We'll be back with you in a moment. Enjoy Beethoven. Welcome. This is your host, Diane Lenning, educator for over 30 years. We have a great show tonight planned with Shirley Huzar, and we are going to be discussing tonight about problems, issues, and solutions in Los Angeles Unified School District, California. Before we get started, our call-in number, our toll-free call-in number is 1-877-497-9937. If you cannot call in and would like to email me a question during the show, email me at diane@lenning.com. Be sure to get out your pencil, pen, and paper because we have lots of good information to give you tonight. And I'll give you a couple of those things before we get started so it won't interrupt our show. One of the important education sites you need to know is www.cde, that stands for California Department of Education, .ca, which stands for California, then /gov. So that's cde.ca/gov. And you need to know that your current superintendent of public instruction of the state is Tom Torlakson. And your office of the superintendent is filled in that position by Dr. John Deasy. The address for the Office of the Superintendent for Los Angeles Unified is 333 South Beaudry Avenue, Beaudry Avenue, Los Angeles 90017. And your superintendent's number for your LA district is 213-241-7000. And I give you that information because you're going to be needing that if you want to have a plan and do something effective about a quality education for your child. The Office of State Superintendent of Public Instruction is actually California Department of Education, 1430 N Street, Sacramento, California, 95814. So please keep your pen and pencil handy. I will try, if we have time, to mention that information again, but our show is archived. So you can listen to this again and get all this information if we only say it once. So don't worry about that. Again, if you have questions, tonight would be a good night because Shirley is a TV host. and she's really good off the cuff. She and I both love to answer questions, unexpected questions. So please call in at 1-877-497-9937. With that, I'm going to say hello to our host and let Shirley say just a little bit about herself. Hello, Shirley.
Well, hello, Diane. Hello, family out there in the educational world. I hope things are going good. I know we feel good because we are on a march for movement of change.
Yes, I agree with that. Thank you so much. Tell our folks a little bit about what you do with your TV show. Give yourself a little plug here.
Well, I appreciate that. My name is Shirley Husar, H-U-S-A-R, and I am an urban game changer. And what that means is that we believe that the urban communities need to take an opportunity to bring change, because we see that definitely that the Democrats are not doing that. And we know that the Republicans, independents, libertarians of various backgrounds and of culture are not being effective. There are districts that are being neglected, districts that are being overlooked, and districts that have been dismissed. Our job is to bring attention to that. I write for the Washington Times out of Washington, D.C., CommunitiesWashingtonTimes.com. Communities, we focus on the communities, and our column focuses on the urban communities. Now, Diane is referring to TV because I also have a blog site called HipHopRepublicans.tv. HipHopRepublicans.tv was created from .com. .tv is out of Los Angeles, and we have people who post videos, and we are writers of the community. It is important that we become more effective and be proactive in urban communities, and especially in education, because there is so much money and liquidity that has been funded through there. We see a lot of, I call it almost like a mafia movement. I see a lot of disruption of mismanagement of funds, and the Republicans are becoming more of the minority sit-back team while we see the Democrats do their conducting. You can follow Shirley Husar, H-U-S-A-R, on Facebook and Twitter. I love Twitter. Twitter me. I do talk to my Twitter followers, and you can also LinkedIn me as well. And I also have YouTube videos. You can go to UrbanGameChanger.com or HipHopRepublicans.tv.
Great. Thank you so much for that. Now, some in our audience may be aware that I ran for State Superintendent of Public Instruction this last time around in 2010 as the Republican, one of the Republican candidates. And as you know, the Democrat, Tom Torlakson, was elected. This is a very key position to be able to contact when you're trying to solve problems in education. So be sure you write this information down. Now, I just want you to know, too, that I don't get paid for doing this, and I don't know if Shirley does either, but I'm doing this, and I believe Shirley is too, doing this out of the goodness of our hearts because we care about our kids and we want to solve the problems and improve education for all our kids. All our kids are guaranteed a good and quality education tonight, and I hope we get to that information I have about that tonight. But if we don't, you know, we can do a program again because this is a big issue. One program just might not do it justice. But what I'd like to do tonight, Shirley, is to start first with some of the problems. You've been out there on site firsthand, and I have been an educator in the California Youth Authority teaching many young people who were incarcerated from Los Angeles Unified. So both Shirley and I have some hands-on with our kids here, and Shirley even has a kid in LA Unified, I believe. So tell us some of those problems and issues you have noticed out there. And if parents have some and we miss them, please call in.
No, the only real change, that you're absolutely right, Diane. The only real change that comes into our communities are from proactive people like you and me. We don't get paid for what we do. Hopefully one day we will. But for right now, when we see injustice that's in place, when we see 40 years of rhetoric and subsidized systems that are not being managed well and mismanagement of leadership in school districts and school board superintendents and city corruption, there's a point where as a constituent like me and you, we have to speak out. We have to be forthright and be proactive. And if we're not proactive, who's going to hold these people accountable? You know, the power applies to the people. We get so mad when we don't like candidates or who they are and what they're doing. But if we utilize our power and we see injustice with our superintendents, with up our school districts, with our districts that are just, to me, mismanaging the money, cities like Los Angeles, LA County, LA City, especially with Villagosa. Are them taking the rights of things that they said they're going to do that they don't do, or taking the benefits of ideas that we create? We need to cause not only a stop but an awareness of that. I have three sons. Two are in college, and one is in a school called the Early College High School. Now, that is a charter school out of Los Angeles. It's a great school. There's many charter schools that are out there, and these charter schools I created because of proactive Republicans in the early 20s, it goes all the way back to 1955 with Milton Friedman as far as him encouraging vouchers. But Diane is a specialist on that. But I will tell you this, having a child, having a choice of being able to be in a charter school where he basically got put into a draw and his name was pulled out. If you want to learn more about that, go see the movie Waiting for Superman. It kind of gives you an idea of how charter schools nationally have affected our school system and how corrupted our teachers are that cannot be fired. And the ones that are fired are firing back, especially with all the sex scandals that are currently on the agenda going on across the country, especially in California.
Well, you know, Shirley, as one of the educators for over 30 years, I was elected a statewide delegate, one of 25 of 335,000 teachers, as a state delegate, sort of like a congressman, to our 10,000-member representative assembly every year, representing California. We have 1,200 delegates in California, one of the most liberal in the nation, but I was the conservative voice. And I know all the problems firsthand, and I know the players, and I know the leaders, and I've worked with all the kids in just about every situation. My hope in running for state superintendent was to have a top-down approach that I could give direction and ideas to the district of how to solve their problems. I taught in a district that was a national Eli Broad winner for most improved student scores in the nation. Each year they pick one district out of all the school districts in America. And about 5-6 years ago, our school won runner-up, and the next year won the national award. And
awesome.
Some of the scores for my kids highly contributed to it, because I taught at-risk students, and so those scores helped count a lot. Now, so I'm saying that because I hope you will listen to the ideas that we're going to come up with tonight to help you. And I'm going to give you opportunity again, Shirley, to tell some more problems. I just want to kind of take turns here. But I'm going to give you a skeleton of a couple of the things I want to talk about tonight. One is a district-wide discipline plan, and I'll be telling you why I think that's important. And I'm going to want to talk about professional development for the teachers and the administrators. And I'm going to tell you why that's important. And I'll have a website or two to share with you. Okay, so you might talk about, Shirley, any of the problems you have known of as far as discipline in the district. How is student behavior in the district?
You know, student behavior is much different than when we were kids. How they're addressed, people are so almost scared to do anything. And when they do something, they're scared about being sued. But the challenge is the discipline really comes from, as constituents and as parents, of speaking out what we know that is better for our children. If we know what is better for our children and we're engaged and we ask questions, that's where discipline begins. So the first thing I would say to anyone is, do you know your student teachers? I mean, if people don't know the teachers' names, they've not gone to any meetings. And if you say that, I have, great. A lot of things are done now, disciplined online. You can track your student online, your child, and know what their grades are. You can correspond back with this teacher. There's different call-in, automatic call numbers that come in. This is all part of the discipline that you need to have for yourself and your student. We always want discipline within the school, but if we hold them accountable, then discipline actions will be in place.
You came up with a real important issue there, Shirley, and one of the things I noticed, you know, I taught in a high school, an at-risk school, where we had a lot of kids who were not doing well, similar to LA kids, and we found that it was important to hold our students accountable, because if they thought we were just going to pour education in their head, that doesn't work. they had to do the work, and they have to go to school, and they have to be accountable, and they need to listen and be respectful of the teachers. But some of the kids nowadays, for whatever reason, we have a lot of reasons that lend to that. One is so many things compete with the kids' attention in the media. Some are from single-parent homes. Some maybe have to work part-time jobs to supplement the home or have younger kids in the family that maybe mom wants them to help sit, all kinds of reasons, or they live in unsafe areas. But we at the school and parents together can make it work. We did where I taught, and it isn't easy, I can tell you, but it is possible, and I have a lot of good ideas for you tonight. And I'm hoping that you will write this down. And what I would suggest you do, and I hope Shirley will be involved in this, is to work up some kind of parent group that works district-wide that advocates for all the kids by going directly to the district superintendent at his office with your plan for what you want them to do. Now, I would suggest you just start with one thing, like something like the district-wide discipline plan, because, and I will tell you in a bit, that is where I saw a huge weakness in my interactions with students and instructors in this district. So the district-wide discipline plan would need to be consistent throughout all schools, K through 12, all of them. They need to have a similar plan where they have consequences for violations of rules that are consistent from school to school. And the first level, they might get detention. The second level, if it's two or three offenses for the same thing, they might get in-house suspension. And during that in-house suspension, they would have to have work to do, usually in the cafeteria with an administrator. And if they didn't bring their work, then they have a runner who goes to the teachers to take work for that student. The idea is they don't get suspended and think they get to sit home and play their games on TV or whatever. That they have to still work. And if it's beyond that and more egregious, then they would have Saturday school. And, you know, one of the things we did for tardy policy for after lunch, it took us 8 to 10 years to get this out and figure it out, but it worked, is, and we all had to work together, the whole campus, we had a great principle for this. But if kids were tardy at lunchtime, when the bell rang, all the teachers closed and locked their door, and all those left outside were on trash pickup detail. Because believe it or not, a lot of our kids get free lunch, and they leave a lot of trash. We had 2,200 kids, and about 1,500 kids would dump their trash. And when they didn't put it in the trash barrel that was often 5 to 10 feet from them, the man my age would have to go around with a stick and a nail on the end to pick it all up for 2 hours. Now, that just isn't right. You know, these kids need to learn how to throw their trash away. Now, you may think that sounds insignificant, but it's making them accountable for their actions and what they do. Now, I have some more suggestions for rules, but I would like to get Shirley's response to those and your comments.
Well, you know, when we talk about discipline within the children, I think we have to start with communication. And that's in conjunction of what you're talking about. You laid a beautiful scenario of agendas and things that they need to be doing. And I think once they understand what they are, it starts first with communicating. Communicating, do you know why we're making you do this? Do you know why A comes after, you know, B comes after A, comes after C? Do you know why you're getting these things, these tasks given to you? And when that child understands that, then they're more accountable for their actions. So the first thing I would definitely say is they're communicating to them everything that you're talking about. Also, those parents being able to contact Tom. You know, it is important that we are proactive, like Diane said. So many times we complain to the teachers and the principals, and we kind of stop there. I mean, with technology, you can go and videotape this trash going on and videotape what's going on and take it to the superintendent and let it be exposed and known. You have that media power right in the palm of your cell phone if you're a parent or even a child. If a child's complaining and sees something, tell your child, you know, take a picture of that. Let us know. Because the bottom line is all of us working together to make unified school districts more accountable in every aspect and also using social media for that.
Well, that lends right into the next thing I was going to say. Every fall, we found out that we required a mandatory parent orientation meeting. And the first meeting, we had 300 parents. And every year
wow.
after that, we filled the gym. Because what we did was we published a short pamphlet book with all of the rules and consequences and all the contact information and how the parents could work with the school and the administrators work together. Because often the young people work the parents against the school because the parents might not know really how it's working. Now everybody knows. We're all on the same page.
Right.
We also had interpreters there for our other languages. We usually had Vietnamese and Spanish and maybe another language in English, so that all the parents who maybe didn't understand could get the story in a way that they understood. So we were all on the same page. And then the first week of school, all the teachers went over a section of the rule for 10 minutes or 15 minutes every day after lunch. And so the kids had to sign this booklet that they had read it and understood the rule.
That is so awesome.
And would abide by it. And I mean, surely that works. What do you think?
Oh, absolutely, because then now you have something to be accountable. There's a track record being created, and there's a synergy of, oh, my God, I better be on my game. I've got to be on my game. And
because everybody knows, huh?
Absolutely, because everybody's involved and engaged, and so they have to be on their game to keep that ball rolling. You know, it's really not that complex, and it doesn't have to feel like we're being chastised as children, as an adult. It's just that we have to think of it in a positive light. We have to think about the laws of attraction of energy that we want dispersed among our children. It is not only about education, but it's also a mental balance that needs to be implied, and that is by saying the good words and doing good things, and sometimes that comes with discipline. So having that discipline and knowing how to communicate that and holding that accountability to create that synergy that Diane is talking about.
Well, you know what, too? We had a mature staff. Most of us were 40 and above, and when I signed on there, I was in my early 40s, and I was one of the youngest. But I'll tell you, older teachers are not all that bad. You know, sometimes we get a bum rap. We won the National Eli Broad Award.
Older
teachers, yes. And it's because we had the knowledge and training of how to do it all, the curriculum and the behavior management. And I can say that none of us got angry. When you get angry is when you lose your kids. They put up a block. So you need to be fair and consistent as administrators, educators, and parents. Well, you know that's the rules, and you signed it, and you do it, and you get it over with, and we'll just move on. It'll be done with. And one of my things when we started this was, well, you know, it's time to face the music. You know, just do it, and let's move on. And so it just, you kind of work how to relate to each kid. Each of them has a little different key that maybe unlocks them. But try to get to know each kid if you're
Absolutely.
An administrator or a teacher. And that makes a big difference. You can be an advocate for each student, yet still be the one who helps them work through their consequences. It's a part of growing
right.
up. This is
and
a part of being an adult.
You know, and let me add to that. When you start working on their situations that they're going through and the consequences, I think we won't know those consequences unless we talk to those kids. And once you identify that, you tell that child, what do you think that they could do better? Because sometimes as a parent, we respond in an emotional manner, and that response can erupt and turn into something that, you know, we never had really intended to become. So I think that you have to enter the game a little bit different and think a little strategy as a parent, and that is listen to that child. Find out what's the issues that are going on and say, this is kind of interesting. Take that into collection, and then after you've done that, then talk to the child about what do you think that we should do. Well, Mom, I've had a situation. My son says, Mom, don't come yet. I'm like, what do you mean? I'm going to go tell those people. He says, nope, I got this, but I just want to let you know what's going on. I'm like, oh, okay. And he came back, and he says, I've handled this, and he told me how he handled it. But we're communicating. Now, there's some things he goes, well, I tried. I said, okay, I got your back now. Let me come in. And so he'll tell me his agenda. You won't have that with your child unless you're communicating them with them. So get that feedback and then let them give the answer to what they think should be done. Doesn't mean they're always right, but guess what? You've got them engaged, and you're gaining their respect and their trust.
You know, one of my favorite sayings to say whenever they would say, Mrs. Lenning, oh, it's so tough, you know, you just make me work so hard. Well, just wait till you graduate and you get out and get a job. They're a lot
Absolutely.
Tougher than I am. And then they always come, well, I don't say all of them, but some of them have come back each year to thank me for preparing them so well for life. And I have been so happy in the last 10 years to go around. Like I went to Chalk Children's Hospital, and there was a high school graduate, I was going to say the name of our school, a high school graduate from our school sitting at the reception desk.
Oh,
and we had
gosh.
taught them people skills.
Small
and
world.
How yes, and how to answer the phone, how to talk to people, and how to write the appointments down, how to be nice with people. And so this young person, Hispanic, got a good job at Chalk Hospital as a receptionist. So there are jobs out there. If you're willing to just jump through the hoops, they're not that hard. Now, the next key to this puzzle is that our educators and our administrators are in on this to help with it work. Because the leadership has to come from staff, and it's important that they have professional development. Now, I'd like to give you all a website where you can see an example of some professional development in a video that you can see a before and after, before this teacher got training and after this teacher got training. It is www.petersprocedures.com. That's the last name, Peters, P-E-T-E-R-S, procedures, P-R-O-C-E-D-U-R-E-S.com. You know, some people have said to me, well, what could be so bad that these teachers need professional development? Well, you're going to see it here in this video. This teacher, for example, had never taught a lesson on curriculum in 7 years.
Ooh.
Okay? You heard about the kids who hang from the chandeliers? Well, in some cases, rare cases, I hope, anymore, that almost happens. But teachers can learn to not have that. And sometimes it just needs some professional development. This Ms. Peters was with this teacher for just a couple of weeks, and then her whole life was changed, and so was that kid's world. You saw these non-compliant kids in 3 weeks all of a sudden nice and compliant, doing what's expected in class. And, you know, there are expectations in class. And I call that my classroom etiquette. You know, we have classroom etiquette we follow here. I remember one year some kid stood up in my class and said something, and another student said, Mrs. Lenning doesn't allow that in her class.
Okay.
So what do you think about professional development? Tell me what you know about teachers and if you think they could benefit by that.
Well, I do think teachers can benefit, but I also have the other part of it, and that is a lot of these teachers are not good teachers. And that what we found is when you don't have good teachers, they need to be let go. And that's kind of a big challenge right there. And the only way that we're going to make them accountable as good teachers is if we're parents that stay involved. And that's our advocacy. It's just going over there and saying, you know what, I didn't like how you handled that child. I didn't like the tone and the voice that you conducted with that child. It's going to that adult and pulling them aside and say, do you always speak to children in this manner? You know, or just watching their interaction with a child. That makes a difference, the energy that they're putting out. If they're in a calm tone voice or a very abrupt voice, if they know how to take charge, or they're just making a calculation on a child out of context. This is where, as a parent, you need to be engaged. You know, and sometimes the kids are just a little smarter than the teachers. I remember when my oldest son was in kindergarten, and he was just a very smart kid, but he was very interactive. And the lady says, you know what, your son is doing this wrong. And I said, okay, I would talk to him. And she kept telling me all the things he did wrong, so I stopped my role, which means I go over there and I said, let me see what the problem is, because I know this is a good kid. And then finally I connected with her. She said, you know what, he doesn't color in between the lines. I said, what do you mean? She says, he doesn't color in between the lines. And then I realized, I said, how old are you again? 25, never been married, no children, first year teaching. I said, oh, I get this. Because the last straw on the camel's back is that he was going to lunch and he couldn't get anybody's attention on a question. So he went to the office and addressed leadership. This is a six-year-old kid. Excuse me, I'm having issues and I need that enough taken care of. And they walked him back to the cafeteria, and the teacher was appalled. She says, he just left his area and went to the office and asked for help. You know, this is so unlikely most of our children, and she wanted me to discipline him for that. And then that's when I asked the office to move him to an older teacher. Because sometimes you have to identify, it may nothing be wrong with your child. It might be the fact that how that teacher is outlooking that child is not the same as how you've trained that child. I've always trained my children to be very independent, and if they see something that's out of line, take it to the next level. That's what that kid did at 6 years old. So when we talk about parents, when we talk about teachers in general and how they handle children and how they interact, and again, that laws of attraction, that distribution of positive energy, we want to make sure that's in place, because when that's in place, it makes it much easier of a process to be educated for a child to learn.
Well, I have about three things to respond to that. And first of all, it takes anywhere from 3 to 5 years for a teacher to really learn how to handle it all. In a really tough school, maybe longer. And during that time, I think there should be some professional development that is required for all new teachers. And one of them would be this Peters Procedures, because it teaches you classroom management. If you have good classroom management and can teach curriculum every day, your students will learn and they will excel and they will pass the exams. It's
absolutely.
When you have teachers who never get a chance or rarely get a chance to teach curriculum that the kids plainly then don't know the information they're supposed to learn. And when I was in college for teacher training many years ago, I won't say how many, I taught over 30 years, we were taught a behavior modification class. So we were taught how to modify inappropriate behavior through different strategies and methods. An approximation of how close you stood to students and what tone of voice and when to ask questions. I ask a lot of questions. I use the inquiry method, teaching history, and instead of just railing on kids and being negative, I always tried to be positive. And I was not really into this just say they're wonderful for everything. What I did is look for when they had any improvement or when they did something good, then I would make a good comment. And I rarely said anything negative. I would say, well, here, let's look at this, or, well, here, let me help you with this. Rather than saying you're doing this wrong, I never said that. Because many kids are sensitive, and one little insensitive remark like that can get them so they can't focus the rest of the period because they're kind of upset. So you don't want to upset your kids. And I think it's really important that you're in tune to each kid as an individual and find them where they are as a person and academically and take them from there. And that can come from training. Now, if a teacher doesn't learn it in the first 5 years with support and professional development and finishing up their college classes, then there is a process in place in most school districts that I've ever been into that you can document and let teachers go. For instance, before a teacher gets tenure, which ours started the first day of the third year, then we were tenured, within the first 2 years, the principal did not have to hire that teacher back. So the administrators have 2 full years in most cases, maybe 3, in which they could just let a teacher go if there was just no indication they were going to make it. And the last 5-10 years I taught, the new teachers that came in, we had 50% who washed out, who couldn't make it. 50% because it was just so tough. They couldn't hang in, especially in high school.
Wow.
So there is ability to wash them out before they have tenure. And I think LA Unified needs to have a better oversight program to do that more, not to get stuck with so many
teachers. Let me say this.
That are bad.
Let's look at the opposite of that. Oh, I agree with you on that. Let's look at the opposite of that. Let's say that is not in place. Let's say that we have a parent out there and say, I love what you guys are saying. It's all encouraging. It's all good. But the reality is my school sucks. The teachers suck. The principals suck. What do I do? And we have to go back to, like Diane was saying, it is that basic communication and discipline that needs to be in place and finding out what are those faults and being a proactive and contacting the superintendent of what is going on. And if you don't do that, then none of these ideas that we're saying are going to have any validation behind them. You as a parent have to be proactive and conscious. Do not be asleep at the wheel. Do not just because your child comes home and says everything is great, think everything is great. Don't just take his even if he's doing good with his grades, Go talk to that teacher that he got a good grade and ask them, why did you give my kid this grade? If it's good or bad, and find out a connection. We have to keep that connection of accountability to kind of have our own little rod in my hand over the teachers to let them know, you know, I'm a parent that has a genuine concern for my child. So I would say, on the other hand, when we see things that are not in place and we find out that there's not laws that are being allocated that should be, we as parents have to step up to the plate and find out what those laws are and see what we can do to make them work.
Well, you could, for instance, start, I know there are several already, either join a parent advocacy group that exists. I know Lydia Grant on Facebook has one. But if you wanted to start a new one that had a little different tack, then, say, Senator Gloria Romero's bill was a bottom-up approach where you just fix one school at a time. But I think you need a top-down approach where you go right to the top, to the superintendent's office, and you tell them, for instance, we want to start and make sure that there is a school-wide discipline plan throughout, and lay it out like I just did, and here's what we want, and have it in writing and hand it to them and say, we would like to see these things. And if you had 10 or 20 parents throughout the district, just any of your friends or anybody, you could have one or two go to a school board meeting every month. You'd be surprised.
That's right. That's
at
right.
What you learn at a school board meeting, and you'd only have to go to one a year because you could report to each other in emails or meet together. It doesn't take a whole lot of people to get it moving from the top because the boss can make decisions.
That's
and
right.
when he
and if,
sees...
And you look him in the eye, and you look him in the eye, I'm going to cut you off, and when you look him in the eye at those meetings, and you let them know, my name is such and such, even if you've only done it once, they're going to remember you. And you're going to have a chain of women who say, oh, you met my friend such and such. Well, I'm such and such. So that person knows that, you know, you're still accountable in every aspect.
And just let them know that we are a group of parents who want to advocate for our kids and make sure that they get a quality education. And we know you have difficulties to overcome, but we believe that growth should occur every year.
That's right.
Growth should occur every year.
That's right.
Yes.
That's very true. That's
because
very true.
They're not going to go from, say, a D student to an A student overnight, although some will. But the whole district is not going to. It's going to be an upward movement. But for some kids who just click in and the light turns on, all of a sudden they get in one of these classes where the teacher has had this Peter's Procedures training, those kids were like dramatically changed. Now, Shirley, I'm going to give you about 3 to 5 minutes to just talk what you'd like, and then I have a caller who may ask us a question or make a comment.
Excellent. Well, you know, I just want to let the family know out there that the Washington Time Communities, you can find me at communities.washingtontimes.com under Urban Game Changers. This month we have been talking about different strategies for the Republican Party, and the column that's number one right now is Republicans giving up California school choice to Democrats. Now, you believe this or not, Villagosa is claiming the name of fame on this issue. Villagosa has been, if you tweet his name, Mayor Villagosa of Los Angeles is claiming that he is pretty much the founder of school choice. He has not stated it directly, but he's basically trying to allocate that among many of these parents. I was at a school rally on March the 5th of 2012, Saturday, where a rally in Exposition Park in front of the Coliseum, and there were thousands of people. As a matter of fact, there were also the LA Unified School District Board President, Monica Garcia, was there. And there were several other people as well. But the interesting part was that the Democrats for Education Reform had partnered up with Families That Can. Now, Families That Can is the one that actually organized this rally, but I thought it was a great strategy, and I'm going to admit this, that the Democrats are playing to take away from the Republicans. This is a game of chess. If we are going to win, we have to be conscious of how they are using us and how we need to take back what we actually created. Now, going back to the Democrats for Education Reform, what they did was they partner up with Families That Can. They've been going to their functions. Their name is on their sponsorship. And they were able to announce that they were sponsors at this 5,000 rally of parents and teachers. Where were the Republicans?
That is where I'm getting with this and going with this. Where are the Republicans? They're nowhere in sight. There are many of those parents out there who might have been registered Republicans, but guess what? Their voices were not heard. And the reason their voices weren't heard, because the Republicans are not proactive. You're not going to get the Democrats to do anything for you. They're not going to inform and tell you their game. The way I was able to know about this is because of what me and Diane said at the first half of this leg, which is we have to communicate and discipline ourselves to stay involved in our children's lives. Just from me being at this rally, I learned about the Democrats for education reform engaged with families that can. Why are the Republicans for education reform there? You can learn a lot about this subject on my column. Please, please go to urbangamechangers.com. The videos, you can see, I did a video so you can see the number of people at the rally. But go to the Washington Times Communities political section and look at this section for Urban Game Changers, the name of the column. And again, this article's name is Republicans Give Up California School Choice to Democrats, because the Democrats are claiming that they are the ones that are allocating it and getting it to move forward, when clearly this is not a true situation. But the Republicans are sitting back and leaving the recipe on the table, and they're taking it and they're running with it.
Thank you for that, Shirley. Again, I want to say the website for the California Department of Education is www.cde.ca.gov. And you might look up uniform complaint procedures. There are three types of complaints that you can make according to law decisions, legal decisions. And one of them is the Williams complaint. Another one is the Valenzuela complaint. And then there's a uniform complaint procedure. And the uniform complaint procedure, you can write a written statement alleging discrimination or harassment or a violation of a federal or state law of regulation. But it must be filed by way of the uniform complaint procedures as written in the code. And it tells you in there, but it's Title V, Section 4600 through 4687. Again, the show is archived, so if you didn't get that, you can listen again later. And the Williams complaint is another type with regards to instructional materials or emergency or urgent facility conditions that pose a threat to health and safety of pupils and teacher vacancy or reassignment, and may be filed anonymously. So those are ways to file complaints. The Valenzuela complaint, per Assembly Bill 347, is a type of Williams complaint and requires that LEAs receive intensive instruction funds to post a notice in grades 10 to 12 classrooms and provide an area on the Williams complaint form for alleging a lack of opportunity to receive intensive instruction and services for pupils who have not passed one or both parts of the high school exit exam by the end of the 12th grade. Now that brings up an area, being a high school teacher, we had after school mentoring classes for students, and federal funding was available a while back, and I read that LA Unified at one time did not take the funds for that and did not develop. Now, I don't know if they have those after-school programs now to make up for, like, math and English, but those are the kinds of things you can insist they have. Kids should be able to pass the high school exit exam because the information should be made available to your kids for them to get a quality education. So we have a caller on the line. It looks like it might be someone from San Diego. Let's see who our caller is. Hello, caller.
May I answer? I'm Maria.
Yes.
Diane, oh, you have a wonderful, both of you talk. I have a question. And, anyway, whatever in your conversation is perfect, is wonderful. Thank God that you bring it up very clear, very clear. My question is, what you going to do about No Child Left Behind? What do you think?
You mean should we support it or what?
Yeah. Cut it up or disappear or support?
Well, Shirley, I have my opinion, and I can go first or I can let you go. Which would you prefer?
Go ahead, Diane. I'll
okay.
Back.
Well, I have studied it once behind, not behind, but a few years back. I even have the CD on it. And we discussed it at length when I was a delegate in the NEA conventions. And I'm the one who came up with the word, it's good, but it's flawed, in one of those meetings. Because I was fearful the Democrats were going to dump it. And we had a chance to develop something that would lift the level of our students. Well, what has evolved is there have been a lot of states since then who have requested and received waivers. For instance, a state like Utah, all their scores are so high that they really didn't need the input of No Child Left Behind. But some states really do, where their academic achievement is lower than expected, and maybe they need some direction from the top to help bring up their standards. But take California. We have excellent standards here. When I went to school here, California was first in the nation. We have excellent standards, but some of our teachers are not teaching well, and some of the kids are not doing well. We now rank bottom of the 50 states in student achievement. That's a sad statement to say, that we've gone first to last in my lifetime. That really hurt my heart. But I think we should know that as long as the federal government is not giving us strong guidelines that we have to do and does not interfere, there is a federal law that says they cannot develop curriculum, et cetera, for us. But as long as they can just keep a leadership role that's more informational, that gives ideas for professional development or suggested standards, and continue to allow the states to have their standards, I'm more in favor of that. National standards, in my opinion, if you do have any, should be like a floor, and that would probably be lower than we should expect. But it is still an ongoing issue. They debate constantly every so often whether to continue it. I think, personally, that the current our leadership in Department of Education in some areas has gone too far, where they're trying to dictate too much to the state and local school districts what to do. So,
thank you. Thank you very much.
Let's hear what Shirley has to say about it.
Thank you.
Well, you know, I actually worked on George W. Bush, who is the first. His administration was the one that proposed this, and so I had a little familiar understanding about it. You know, its intention was always good. Understand that, because education, we want education to be much better than what it is, and a much more of an accountable facet of a way. And that's the challenge that we have right now. We have a lot of people who are leaders and teachers and instructors, and they have their basic standard. But we needed a standard in place, a reform based on the premise of understanding high school structure and establishment of measures of goals. And that was their intent. Again, their intention was good because, the Congress wanted to implement this act of education for schools, for public schools. And again, that was done under George Bush, for those who don't know it. And it was a limited but bipartisan supported bill that was passed back in 2001. Now, 2012, this is the challenge that we're having. Again, its intention was to bring an establishment of measurement goal to improve the individual outcome of education. But what it has become is the basic skills and how everyone looks at how those basic skills are to be implemented. It's different. Everybody has a different agenda of what they feel No Left Child Left Behind Act should be. And so it is still, like Diane said, it is something that's a working progress, a process. It is not on the forefront of the agenda of this campaign trail because we have so many people that are unemployed, that are homeless, we still see the gas issues arising. There's just a level of survivalness right now that's so much on the forefront that it seems like No Child Left Behind Act is not in the forefront. But the reason why it's not, because there's other issues that are pressing. But this is an important issue. So it's a start. I think, like, you have to keep in mind the things that me and Diane have stated prior to what we're talking about now will help and better the standards of education reform that is needed, and that is discipline structure.
Right. I could tell you a couple of objections teachers have made. I did a videotape on it about 6 years ago. And some of the objections were that there was a lot of testing. Well, I happen to be a person who liked testing and made testing a good experience for my kids. And I didn't teach to the test, and I never did my whole career and never needed to for my kids to succeed, to be first. And secondly, some of the teachers objected because their schools could improve. But if they didn't improve enough, they were still on a list where they had to be like on temporary probation or something. And so they were somewhat unhappy that sometimes their improvement wasn't recognized. In fact, they were put on a probation list if it didn't rise enough. So that was part of the problem. And they've been working out some of those issues. They had a year or two where teachers were able to contact Congress directly, and I did that, to tell them our issues with it. But like I say, I do agree with states in control of the education as far as standards, state standards, and stronger local control. But, you know, each state is a little bit different than the other. So to try to make them all alike, I don't think it would work. Very well. And so leaving room for some flexibility, I think, is good. Does that help
you,
caller?
You know why I ask you? Excuse me. Why I ask you? Because good for the kids that they are starting with writing and reading. This is the first main basic. That's what I believe. That is the best main part.
And it does focus on, it does focus on reading and math and writing, which is good, because we have a lot of immigrants in the last 10, 20 years who are learning English as their second language. And so we've had to focus greatly on that in California. I taught ELL students my career, and there is a unique qualification for that as an educator above and beyond what we used to do.
You know, and let me add this too, and not to cut you off, Diane, but I think we have to keep in mind too, this is also a game of politics within politics, because even if that thing would have been perfect, you still would have had the union people upset against it, you would still have the socialists upset about it, they would have wanted some socialized, subsidized system implemented into the program. It would have had to have been altered to make it more favorable for them, because they are in control of the urban community schools, and they are the ones that are going to dictate, and they are the ones that are going to be seeking credit, just like I mentioned in my article about school choice. So we don't want to really talk about that part of the game, but it's part of the game. The urban games are not liking the fact that they don't create our ideas, like No Child Left Behind was a good idea, and it was a good bill, but it got twisted, and it wasn't really clarified. And so because of that, they made it seem like it had all these flaws. Well, if it has flaws, let's try to fix it and make it better. But we can't do that because we have egos on the table, and we have inside politics training going on.
Well, I say I retired in 06, and before that, I met him at the pass and tried to intervene before it got to the national politics. But with that, I'd like to say that we need many, many more young Republican educators into the public education system to balance it out. All the statistics show that Republican superintendents of schools and educators do better than the other party. That's what the stats show. And it's because of our strategy and method of how we teach instruction and how, I can't, for the lack of a better word, dispense it, but the way we educate seems to bring in more critical thinking and better skills development and reading and answering questions with greater ease and understanding. So we're nearing the end. Are there any comments our caller would like to make? And then I'll let Shirley make a few closing comments.
Anyone out on the phone? Yeah.
No, you
anyone
can ask
on the phone?
No, you can ask another question if you want.
Okay, okay. This is maybe not on your program, because my concern, since I have my research is about the children. About I have three of them here. The children that have a parent, that they have a father, mother. The second one, the children that the single parent. And the third one is a foster home. All of the children need care, especially education. What do you think about these three different levels?
I think that's a really good question, Maria. I'm glad you asked it.
I'm going to give Shirley the
opportunity to answer first if she wants or defer to me.
No, I can answer it. Maria, okay. I'm sorry, we're a little broken. Say that one more time.
Go ahead.
The parents. Yeah. That is that they have enough care, a complete home. That is, you know why I mentioned it? Because emotions need love, need care, need attention. Yeah, and something like that. Now, when they have the parent, they have a father, mother. Now, this kid is okay. And the second group, that kid is single parent. And then I just found out a couple of months ago that I have met involved with the sober living home here, and I found the single parent is. I have a 3-4 phone call today. Need a place to stay, because they won the case, and then the court give her the children can be with her, but she is the single parent. Now my concern is about education.
Let me go ahead, because I know we're short on time and I can answer your question. You know, this is a barter system that's going on where we all have to work together, and we all are parents to the children that are out there. That if a parent is working, sometimes neighbors will take that child on, or sometimes family members are all moving in with each other. It's a mentor thing that I'm hearing you talk about. You know, the Girls and Boys Club have after-school activities where they're getting mentored rec leaders. The state recreational centers have things that people can go to. They can go look that up online. Looking for a mentor is very important. The parent is not able to provide an idea or a concept, maybe not really knowing. There's no book on how to be a parent. For a lot of young parents, they don't know what to do, and they look for some guidance, and sometimes they don't have good guidance. So I would say to you is, you know, I respect where you're coming from, but this is something that's nothing new. I mean, that's why you have coaches. Sometimes athletes will look at it as their coach, as their parent, or there's one teacher that can say one good word. I mean, you as a parent, or even if you don't have any children, just speak positive words to those children. You know, life is about a contribution. If you can contribute, speak life. Because, you know, scriptures say that life and death is in the power of the tongue, and mentoring and providing outside school activity, recreational centers, and things like I said, the Boys and Girls Club, these are things that are uplifting the child. And that will bring the balance of what is lacking as far as that love and tender care that you're talking about.
Those are all very good. In fact, our daughter does an after-school care. It's called Eagles Outpost. And she did the Y after school as far as her mainstreaming. But as far as what the school can do during the day, there are things. One of the things our district developed was a parents' corner on one of the high school campuses where we taught the parents English, parenting skills, and computer skills, and then they've developed it since then. So the district could have, in a large district like LA, they could have 2 or 3 parent corners where they taught parenting and they taught these kind of skills. Organizational skills is heavily needed among students. And the special ed students are often kids from foster homes and one-parent families. I had a high incidence of students who lived in motels or in cars or in foster homes, and I was like their parent at school. And they would sometimes ask me questions of what happened after school, and if I thought I could answer it, I answered it. And if I could refer them to some agency, we have a lot of agencies we can refer through our counselors. So we need to make sure that each school has a counselor and more if it's a larger campus. So there are some things within the framework of the school that they can deal with this situation you're talking about. That is what we call at-risk students. But as far as finding them a place to live after school, that's somewhat beyond, other than we just refer them to social services at the county level.
Does that help?
Right.
Thank you.
Okay,
Wonderful.
Well, thank you so much for being here tonight. This was
really
my pet subject tonight.
And I thank Shirley so much
for writing about it and coming on the radio tonight.
Absolutely.
Remember?
I'm so honored to be on. Hey, you guys, please keep supporting Diane. Diane is doing some major things in Los Angeles. She's very thorough. She's like an encyclopedia. Well, those who are Ron Paul fans, you know, they call him the father of the Constitution. Well, Diane is the mother of discipline when it comes to the school district in California and holding it more accountable. But it's not a one-man show. Diane needs support. Please tell your friends and your family. Make sure you go to hiphoprepublican.tv and go to Urban Game Changers Washington Times. Washington Times, the communities. The communities in Washington Times. Urban Game Changers, that's Shirley Hussar. Please click the plus Google and the like button for Facebook, but the plus Google and Stumble Up. Stumble Up is definitely great to go to. Shirley, H-U-S-A-R, that's my last name. Please follow me on Twitter. Talk to me. Tell me what you thought about today's show.
Thank you so much, everyone.
You,
and this is Diane Lenning. Thank you, caller. This is Diane Lenning, your host. If you'd like to contact me, my email is diane@lenning.com. You can also friend me on Facebook. I have two pages, so look for the one with about 1,700 and ask to befriend me on Facebook, and you can contact me that way. And sometimes I post about education issues. You can watch for those, and it will help you. I hope you start a group. If you have a group and want to contact me for getting ideas as your consultant, I would be happy to help it where I can with the time I have. So thank you so much. We look forward to our show next month. Education
is the...
sometimes
you can see Diane. Yes, sometimes you can see Diane Lenning on my wall, too. I'm a Maria Killis. You kids that she put on my wall, too, Jerry. Oh, this kid. You never
well, and I translate. Yeah, I will put in Spanish or Chinese, Thai, any Asian language, any language you need, let us know. We'll translate for you.
That's right.
So,
Carrie,
we love you all. Carrie. We thank you so much for being with us. I'm going to just put the music up a little bit. Enjoy that music going on. We'll see you again in 1 month on the first Wednesday of every month for education.
Thank you, Carrie.
That will be April 4th.
Thank you, Carrie.
And the other weeks of the month, we teach English. Thank you so much, Shirley. The other weeks of the month, we teach English. So you can see that. Look it up at blogtalkradio.com/Diane-Lenning. Thank you so much, everybody. God bless you. And we love you and every one of your kids. And we want you all to get a quality education. Good night, y'all.
Good
night, Shirley. Good night, Maria. Thank you so much.
Thank you. God bless you all.
God bless you all. Next time.
Bye.
Bye.